I call the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order at 8:04 a.m. Today is Thursday, March 29th. Joining me today, we have Representative Sadler, Representative Tallarico, Co-Chair Parrish, and Representative Lincoln. I'd like to introduce staff. We have Lori Rowland from House Records, Grace Renee Singh, our committee aide, and Eileen Keim, our teleconference operator. We do have a quorum to do business this morning. At this time, I just want to remind committee members and those in the room to silence your cell phones and other electronic devices. We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 390 for ranked choice primary elections. This is the first hearing on the bill. Would the bill sponsor of House Bill 390, Co-Chair Parrish, and his staffer, Patrick Courtnage, come to the testifier table, identify yourself for the record, and begin your presentation?
Good morning. I'm Representative Justin Parrish, a representative for District 34.
And I am Patrick Courtnage, staffer to Representative Parrish.
So the House Bill 390, the Ranked Choice Primary Elections Bill, does something very, very intuitive. Suppose you and 10 friends were sitting around trying to agree on what to have for dinner, and you put it to a vote, and the highest vote getter was spaghetti with 3 votes. That's probably not where the conversation would end, because you don't have a majority of people agreed on what to do. However, in our elections, in one of the most important decisions we make, probably the most important as a democracy, that's what happens. Whoever gets the largest number of votes, the plurality, even if it's only 30%, prevails. That's where the conversation ends. And I think that's very inefficient. It leads to a sense of disenfranchisement. And as the subsequent presenters will explain, it has other negative consequences. This bill, if implemented, would probably result in increased voter turnout and less negative campaigning, as well as greater sense of voter enfranchisement. I'll turn it over to my staff, Patrick Courtnage, for a more detailed introduction. However, I would like to keep this section brief, as I do have some invited testimony who I've already had to reschedule.
Great. Thank you, Representative Parrish. Again, for the record, this is Patrick Courtnage, staffer to Representative Parrish. And first we want to dive in today as to what is ranked choice voting. But before we get into ranked choice voting, let's briefly explore as to what we currently do within our elections. And so currently we elect individuals based on a plurality. And so that means that the candidate who gets the most votes ends up winning. And so a candidate can receive 35-40% of the vote. The key here is being less than 50%, less than an absolute majority, and therefore less than a majority of the people's will can win an election. And so we're going to explore ranked choice voting, which is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Quite literally, a voter can put down their first choice, which in this case on the slide we see is candidate A. They can put down their second choice, which could be candidate C, and their third choice, candidate B, so on and so forth, depending on how many candidates are on the ballot. Once all those ballots are submitted, they are counted, and the individual, if they have a majority, they automatically win, a majority being defined in this case as 50% plus one. And if none of the candidates have a majority, then we go into where it deviates from the plurality election. And so we have what's called instant runoffs. And so this all happens instantly, during the counting process. And so on the slide, we see round one of a vote, and we have candidates A, B, C, and D. Now, in this example, we see candidate D has the least number of votes at 15, and so during the counting process, they are eliminated because none of the candidates have a majority. And so this is where what happens next is very important. All the voters who voted for candidate D, they also had a second choice. And those second choices become that voter's first choice, and they're redistributed to the remaining candidates. And so in the round two, which we can see on the slide, we can see those additional votes for each candidate A, B, and C. Now, none of them have a majority yet, and so we do another round, another runoff, excuse me. And now in round three, we've redistributed the third choice votes, or sorry, the second choice for candidate C, because they haven't been eliminated yet, and or maybe the third choice if the members from candidate D who went to candidate C, they are redistributed to candidate A and candidate B. Now we see that candidate A has received a majority of the vote, and therefore the winner. So to contrast round one to round three, candidate A would have won in either case. However, we see in round one, candidate A had roughly 36% of the vote, whereas in round three, they had 56% of the vote. And therefore, we have a majority, and a majority of the people had the ability to voice their vote as to who would win the election. Now, where is ranked choice being used today? We can see it's already being used around the country. The most important place on this map is Maine. And Maine is going to be using ranked choice voting in their upcoming state election this June during their primary. So they will be electing state officials, or they'll be doing the primaries for state officials as well as U.S. congressmen and women. We can also see it's used in municipalities around the state. Many, like Portland, Maine, they've been using it. Minneapolis, Minnesota, San Francisco, Oakland, most recently, Santa Fe, New Mexico elected their mayor through ranked choice voting, which in your packet I have included a survey from that election, which is very insightful to how people felt about it, and we'll touch on that a little bit later as well. It's also what I think is fascinating, used in party elections for both Republican and Democratic parties in various states. So Representative Parrish mentioned some of the benefits of ranked choice voting, and we often see many candidates deciding not to run for election because it's frowned upon because they may become a spoiler vote. And under ranked choice voting, those spoilers or splitting of the vote don't take place due to the redistribution. And so that encourages more of those candidates to run for office. And when you have those candidates running for office, then you get some voters who would say, oh, I'm wasting my vote because there's no chance they're going to win. Well, under ranked choice voting, a voter can vote their values for who they wish to vote for, knowing that vote won't be wasted because they have that second and third choice. And when you have more people inspired to come to the voting booth in order to put down the name of who they wish to win, that will increase voter turnout, which we do have statistics on showing that happening. And when you have the second and third choice of voters, that also reduces negative campaigning, because those everybody wants to win, and when you have to appeal to other candidates' base voter group, then that incentivizes a candidate to campaign based on policy and values and not on negative campaigning. And we have seen some research showing that negative campaigning has been reduced on different elections throughout the years as well. And so just to reiterate some of the things we've already said, ranked choice voting does encourage more candidates to run, so we will likely see more candidates who are female, those who from minority groups would also likely run, and hopefully we would get a more diverse, more representative, and fair election through ranked choice voting. Thank you.
Does that conclude your testimony?
And that concludes my presentation. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
And I would ask of the members of the committee if we could move to my
testimony.
Move to my testifiers. Invited testifiers, as we have a little bit of a time constraint. I will be asking for the adoption of a committee substitute, which will only change one section, which I'll let Patrick explain.
So in your packet, there is a committee substitute, which should be immediately after the bill. And it under Section 3, line 24, so that would be page 2, line 24, within that work draft, there's the word plurality vote. And so in the original bill, that shows the word majority. So it would read as, in the original, it read as offices of governor and lieutenant governor are selected by majority vote at a general or special election. We simply changed that word majority to plurality. And we do have Elpheus from Legislative Legal online for questions regarding that, but the word change is primarily to clarify that the governor's election for the primary would continue under the current system as is, and the reason for that is under Article 3, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution, it does say the governor shall be chosen by the qualified voters of the state at a general election. The candidate receiving the greatest number of votes shall be governor. And so that implies, Legislative Legal feels that implies that ranked choice voting would not be allowed for the primary according to the Constitution, because it does require the greatest number of votes.
So really quickly before we move on, I just want to acknowledge that Representative Drummond joined us at 8:06 and Representative Rauscher joined us at 8:08 a.m. this morning. Good morning. before we get started on questions from the committee, we do have invited testimony. If the committee is amenable to hearing the invited testimony, if we could hold our questions.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Invited testimony, has there been public notice of testimony by those other than those who have been invited to testify?
I believe there has been. So there are a couple, there are some people from the public for public testimony as well.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So seeing no objections, we will move on to invited testimony. The first invited testifier that we have this morning is Karen Brinson-Bell from Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. Ms. Brinson-Bell, are you on the phone?
I am. Thank you.
If you could, please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation and begin your presentation.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Zolkowski and members of the committee. I'm Karen Brinson-Bell. I'm an election administration consultant with the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. I've worked in election administration since 2006, having served with the State Board of Elections of North Carolina as a district elections technician and also I'm the former election director for Transylvania County, North Carolina. And I appreciate you allowing me to join you by teleconference this morning, or this afternoon for where I am. If you can't tell by my accent, I'm now living in Charleston, South Carolina, having worked in North Carolina. I want to read my prepared remarks for you and hope that you have a copy of these as well for future reference. Having worked together overseeing statewide municipal and district ranked choice voting elections, often known as RCV elections, the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center consulting team is focused on expanding the resources and information available regarding the administration of and education about this voting method. We have developed a repository of best practices and firsthand experiences through our website, which is at rankedchoicevoting.org, and our model implementation plan. We provide webinars, podcasts, and presentations at no cost to assist election administrators, policymakers like yourself, candidates, and the public to identify whether ranked choice voting is an option for their jurisdiction and to assist in implementation plans, including processes for tabulating results, voter education, and other items. We work closely with usability experts, the voting equipment vendors, local clerks, audit specialists, and others. The more we learn, the clearer it becomes that ranked choice voting elections have and will work efficiently and effectively in our nation's elections, including elections for Alaska, as have been outlined in House Bill 390. Ranked choice voting has emerged as a solution for promoting majority support, broader representation through voter choice, inclusive leadership, and civility. Our role is not advocacy-focused. Rather, we aim to provide resources that allow jurisdictions to overcome the perception that implementing and conducting RCV might be too difficult. I was asked to give some history on this voting method, so I'll do that now. Ranked choice voting has been a part of the U.S. election process for more than 100 years, actually. It was invented in Europe in the 1850s as a proportional representation system, and it was adapted to a single winner or instant runoff format in the 1870s by an MIT professor by the name of William Ware. Shortly thereafter, Australia adopted the system and continues to use RCV today, along with countries such as Scotland, Ireland, and Malta. It was in 1915 that Ashtabula, Ohio, became the first U.S. city to implement RCV, and by the 1940s, RCV was in 24 cities across 6 states. However, by 1962, 23 of these 24 cities had repealed RCV for reasons largely related to party bosses realizing that it was difficult to control council members once they were elected, and newly introduced lever voting machines could not be used with RCV. Yet Cambridge, Massachusetts has continued to use RCV for more than 70 years for city council and school board elections. 10 additional U.S. cities currently use RCV as well. There are 5 states and the city of Springfield, Illinois, that use RCV for military and overseas voting. And in June, as Patrick mentioned, the method will be used statewide in Maine. While there is future use also approved for Benton County, Oregon, and in 7 other cities across the country. I'd also note that we gave testimony to Utah, which recently adopted a pilot program for municipalities in Utah to use RCV in their legislative session that just ended a few weeks ago. Having administered ranked choice voting elections in North Carolina, I can also share firsthand experience. When the state legislature established opportunities for municipalities to pilot RCV, I helped the city of Hendersonville in 2007 and in 2009 with the voting method. Analysis by North Carolina State University of exit poll results after that first RCV election concluded that RCV worked as intended, and more than 85% of those voters found RCV easy to understand. In 2010, I also helped administer both statewide and district-level judicial vacancy elections with RCV. This successful implementation occurred in a three-month window. It was actually 86 days that we had from start to finish. It utilized existing voting equipment and was part of a ballot that was included non-RCV contests and worked within the confines of our existing election budget. We actually only spent $200 on marketing and voter education, and worked closely with the media, issued public public service announcements and added supplemental information to our statewide judicial voter guide. Last but not least, our most effective voter education tool proved to be written and verbal instruction to the voters when they presented themselves at polling places and in their absentee by mail materials. In my current capacity, the consulting team and I have analyzed the ranked choice voting capability of existing voting equipment and are currently in the testing phase for a universal RCV tabulator, which is available as free open source software to any jurisdiction or voting system vendor. We also plan to have it federally tested by an EAC-approved lab later this year. While Alaska's current voting system, which is comprised of the AccuVote TSX and AccuVote OS, this system does not have built-in RCV capability. Data can be exported for tabulation using our universal RCV tabulator. If you move forward with a new voting system, as I understand has been discussed, and also an all-mail balloting method, the latest voting systems from the four largest vendors in the U.S. are RCV capable. I would point out that none of these vendors, however, have a product capable of optical character recognition, I believe as proposed in the bill, so we would encourage an amendment to the bill that allows for methods that currently exist within the voting system, which include a grid or a column-style ballot design. We can provide further assistance on those and give you more in-depth analysis if that would be helpful, and we can also give more insight as you make decisions regarding ranked choice voting, all-mail balloting, and any other changes in your voting system. We stand ready to help, and I stand ready to answer any questions that you might have for me, and I appreciate this opportunity.
Are there any questions? Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it very much. I have a few questions because this is all very new to me, and you rank your candidates. Suppose if you only rank one candidate each time, does that work?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, I believe
so. I guess so.
Okay, yes.
Thank you.
So with ranked choice voting, as with any election, a voter can choose to vote for whichever candidates they choose. If they only have one candidate they prefer, then they would only mark that ballot accordingly. We do encourage, of course, that they would mark additional preferences, and quite often voters seem to have additional preferences because that allows us to continue with the ballot counting process. But if you think of it in terms of if it were a runoff situation, there are often voters who would make their first selection when they go in on the primary day or the election day, but then they might not participate in a runoff because they don't prefer either of the candidates that made it into the runoff round. So they wouldn't lose their option to only vote for one voter, or excuse me, one candidate, but certainly this allows for it.
Madam Chair, follow up. So what I heard was if you only choose one candidate on your first, second, and third choice, there's a chance that you won't be involved in the second or third go-around if there was one needed. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
And this only takes place if there's no majority, according to this. Correct.
That's right.
If move on to the next round, if there's only
candidate receives the majority, then you go into the additional rounds of counting. If a candidate does receive a majority vote, then they are declared the winner.
And all right. Well, I thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brinson Bell, tell me more about the Ranked Choice Voter Resource Center. Where is it located? Who's on the board? Where does its support come from?
Certainly. We actually all work remotely since we are a consulting team. The original premise for our group was we were hired as consultants to a group called FairVote, which has advocated for ranked choice voting. They recognized that, though they were familiar in reasons to advocate for the voting method, they didn't fully have the background to understand from an elections administration standpoint. So we have advised them, and then sort of developed into our own entity as a consulting team to give input to election administrators on our experience of having implemented it. We leave it to groups like Fair Vote or yourselves as policymakers to decide if it's the right voting method for your jurisdiction, but then try to help in understanding what's possible with the voting equipment or how to synthesize the different rules that can be decided. Many are in the bill about how to handle a skipped ranking or other rules or procedures. So that's our role, is to be non-advocacy, but to provide expertise in the implementation process. We have recently formed a new advisory board, and it consists of six individuals. One is actually a legislator out of Utah who worked on the RCV bill there. Another is a clerk from the city of Minneapolis who's helped to administer. So those are just two I can identify real quickly for you. I can provide you the others later if you need, but they are individuals who have actually worked either in the legislation or the administration of elections for ranked choice voting.
I follow up.
Representative Sather.
Thank you, ma'am. So that's your advisory board, but is that the governing board of the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center?
Since we're a consulting group, we actually don't have a governing board at this point. We simply work as consultants.
And to follow, so who are the consultants, and you know, who are the people who are actually the center staff?
Yes. The consultants include myself, and then the project lead or consulting lead is Gary Bartlett. He was the state executive director for elections for North Carolina for 20 years. We were also joined by George Gilbert, who is retired as the election director in Guilford County for 25 years. That's Guilford County, North Carolina. And then the other consultant is Connie Schmidt, and she is a former election commissioner, I believe, for more than 20 years. I don't remember exactly how many years now, for Johnson County, Kansas. She's also been a technical writer for the Election Assistance Commission, has worked in consulting with the city of Minneapolis. We're the four consultants at this point. We do receive some support help from a staff attorney with Fair Vote to give us legal advice or technical assistance as needed, and his name is Chris Hughes.
Okay. And would it be, follow up, would it be fair to characterize you guys as nonpartisan, or are you, what's your political orientations?
We are definitely nonpartisan. We still assume the role as election administrators, even though we are all former administrators now, but just as we wore a nonpartisan hat in that capacity, we do so as a consulting team and have worked with legislators and groups and clerks who are of all party affiliations at this point.
I don't want to monopolize questions, but so I'll yield to anybody else, but I do have some more questions.
Is there anybody else on the committee that has questions for Ms. Brinson-Bell before we move on? Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Brinson-Bell, for participating from so far away this morning. In the presentation that Representative Parrish and his staffer made, they talked about Maine using RCV in June in their state primary. Is it true that Maine also has publicly financed elections?
I actually don't know all the details to that. I would have to get back to you on that question. I do believe there is some public financing, but I don't know all the details.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'd heard that the Maine judiciary that ruled against this election style in this year's election. Is that true, or are they going ahead with it?
There's a lot of complexity to the Maine situation. It was a constitutional amendment put forth by referendum of the people, and it was then put forward to their state Supreme Court for what they call a solemn occasion, where they give an opinion and it's not a ruling. Their opinion was that there were certain offices that could not be elected by ranked choice voting. So that's why they are actually moving forward with the use of ranked choice voting in the primary, but would not be doing so for their general election. However, in the midst of all of this, the legislature passed a bill that would change that process. That bill then had a people's veto, and that people's veto will also be on the ballot in June to override that legislation. And depending on the outcome of that people's veto on the ballot in June, there will be a determination as to whether they will move forward in the general election or not.
Sounds like they need.
I hope I explained that in particular. That seemed like a long circle of an answer.
Representative Lincoln has a follow-up question.
And so I'm curious. So there's about a million people in Maine, I think, 1.3. And do you know how? And is Portland the only city that's currently using it there? Or do you know what portion of the state population has already been using ranked choice voting for a while and are already familiar with it?
It has not been used statewide. It has only been used in the city of Portland.
Do you know how large that community, that city is? It the biggest city in Maine, or is it?
I believe it is the largest city in Maine. I don't remember the population. For point of reference, North Carolina, when we did our statewide judicial contest that was part of our general election ballot, we had approximately 4.3 million voters at that time.
Follow-up, Representative Lincoln.
And did North Carolina already have, like, did the population already have some familiarity with it, like in municipal elections, or I'm trying to.
We had conducted two pilot elections, once in 2007 with the city of Cary and the city of Hendersonville. Hendersonville is about 13,000, and I think the population of Cary is somewhere around 100,000. And then in 2009, the city of Hendersonville had enough candidates to file to use ranked choice voting again as part of a pilot.
Yep,
I guess
so that was the only familiarity that was in the state of North Carolina prior to having a statewide ranked choice voting election.
So if you were to contemplate, you know, going from, you know, no ranked choice voting in a state to maybe eventually going to statewide elections, are there pros or cons to maybe starting with, you know, local municipal elections and getting people comfortable with the voting method, or in your opinion, is that not worthwhile? Like, is it better just to go statewide?
I think what Alaska would benefit from is that where the technology and the voter education materials that we know have worked in so many places, there's a foundation that's in place. So if Alaska wanted to move forward as proposed in this bill with statewide, I don't think you would find it to be a major hurdle that we actually did face in North Carolina, yet only had 86 days to pull it off. But we found that people did understand it, and it's really intuitive. We think in terms of if we can't have that choice, what would be our next choice in so many things. So I don't think it's a difficult thing to go forward as proposed in the bill. If you need to be a little more cautionary in your approach, then certainly you could segment it out, and a municipal option would be certainly one approach. Hawaii has considered doing congressional vacancy elections, and I know special elections are proposed in this bill, so you could segment it out, and that would be a way to begin the process and become familiar with the procedures and the rules and the voter education. But I think there's many good examples of how it can be done effectively and how the resources are there to go forward, even as this bill proposed. Santa Fe, though obviously not as large as the state of Alaska, they had about a two-month period to even implement and create their rules and move forward. So it can be done timely, it can be done effectively, and it is well understood by the voters, is what we have found and continue to find.
Ms. Brinson-Bell, this is Representative Zelkowski. I have a question. It sounds from the presentations that we've heard this morning that ranked choice voting has been used in cities and metropolitan areas. The state of Alaska has a large diverse population, as well as really small communities, sometimes under 1,000 people. So I'm hoping you can speak to whether ranked choice voting has been used in communities from as small as 500 people in a community that maybe have English as a second language to larger scale communities. Can you speak to that?
I'm not sure that I can identify a community as small as what you referenced, other than to say that within North Carolina we have metropolitan counties all the way down to small counties with fewer than 3,000 voters. And it, you know, obviously was used in all of those jurisdictions. In terms of the different languages, we certainly have examples of that. Santa Fe is a bilingual ballot and bilingual election, so their ballot was presented in both English and Spanish for the ranked choice voting, and that occurs in all their elections. The city of Minneapolis has multiple languages, including Somalian, so they have a diverse population, and San Francisco would be another great example. The San Francisco elections, and also the different ranked choice voting cities that are in Alameda County. Alameda has actually multiple language videos that they put out and materials in multiple languages to explain the voting process.
All right. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Benson-Bell, for your testimony today. I've really appreciated it. I would like to go back to a figure you referenced in your presentation. Did I hear you correctly that in one case you only spent $200 statewide on voter education?
That's right. Yes, when the vacancy occurred and we learned that we had 86 days, obviously, we didn't know at that time that we would have ranked choice voting as part of our general election ballot until that date in August. And there was no budget because of not knowing that would occur. We worked with the North Carolina Broadcasting Association, and they already had an agreement in place to do voter education just for elections in general, but they agreed to do additional work for us regarding ranked choice voting. So we were able to do that in a public service announcement capacity, and therefore just had a relationship and in some respects a grant to provide for it. So the only actual dollars from the state budget that were spent on voter education towards ranked choice voting were $200, and that went towards an additional page in our existing judicial guide that is printed through the state printing services and sent to every household in the state. And just that additional page was a $200 additional cost.
Hello?
Everything else was just done by public presentations, the public service announcements we mentioned, the work of the counties to do things like inserts in their water bills or presentations to things like the Rotary. We found that because it's hard to know who all can be, who's truly civically engaged and how you can reach them. In the end, the very best thing that we had was just clear instructions and a small handout that was given to each voter when they came to vote or received their absentee by mail materials.
Hello? Mm-hmm. How was the voter satisfaction from that? How did the public respond?
We didn't actually have an exit poll conducted of that particular election because of the short time frame and the magnitude of trying to be in all the counties. But we had a positive response, and the outcome, we did even go into a runoff and into a recount. So the public was very aware and full transparency in those processes to make sure that they were comfortable in the outcome So the general support was there. We just don't have an exit poll to show on that one.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to our testifier, Ms. Brinson. Who approached whom about this? I mean, you're in North Carolina. We've got a letter of support from Humboldt University. I just wonder, did you reach out to Alaska, or did Alaska reach out to you?
We definitely track what's occurring, but I believe the order of things, I don't know who got in touch with who in terms of Representative Parrish and Fairvote, but there were conversations there, and it was Fairvote that, of course, knew of our expertise and background and put us in contact, made that introduction. And then I had conversations with Representative Parrish's aide and discussed what we knew in terms of vendor capabilities and things, and that's how we came to be associated.
Thank you. Follow up?
Representative Sadler.
I guess I'd redirect that question to the sponsor of the bill. Did you reach out to the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center, or did they reach out to you, or did Fair Vote reach out to you first?
Through the chair. I can have my, if I may have my staff member, Patrick Kortenich, come through. He's been doing all the work in lining up the testifiers. As to the genesis of the bill, I called Ledge Legal and said, hey, I want a ranked choice vote bill. And that ultimately brought us here.
So follow up. So you started it off, the Fair Choice or Fair Vote or the Ranked Choice Resource Center did not call you first?
I can let my staff respond to that, but ultimately, yes, I'd become convinced of the merit of the ranked choice voting system.
So they called you first?
No.
Okay.
The way around.
We'll ask Mr. Kortenich if you could answer Representative Sadler's question.
For the record, this is Patrick Kortenich. Patrick Kortenich, staffer to Rep. Parrish. And the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center did not call us first. To clarify more of what Representative Parrish said, he was convinced just through general resources that RCV was a good way to go, and he asked Legislative Legal to draft a bill, and then I was tasked with putting together the presentation for it. Fair Vote, they are an advocacy group for ranked choice voting, and they sent a general email to us once the bill was submitted about, hey, we see you submitted a ranked choice voting bill. If you have any questions, we are here to support you. They did provide a lot of information regarding ranked choice voting and what has been done presently. And as Karen, I think, has spoken on the line, they do have some partnership with Fair Vote. And so Fair Vote is the organization who put us in contact with Karen, as well as the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center.
Gotcha. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Representative Rauscher, did you have a question?
I do, but I'll wait. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
All right.
Actually, then I have a couple more questions for the woman we have on. I'm sorry, I want to make sure I pronounce your name right. Brinsonville. I've heard a couple of comments from the sponsor and from you about how the benefits of a ranked choice voting would be to increase the diversity, get more females and minorities and so forth to run for office. Is that a goal of this, or is that an additional benefit of ranked choice voting?
I would say that it's outside of my area of expertise to some degree, since it's not a matter of administration, but my understanding from reports I've read is that it's more of an added benefit than any kind of goal.
Okay. And a follow-up, I've heard the term wasted vote, and I would appreciate if you give me the definition of what you think a wasted vote is.
That term could also be an exhausted ballot, and that's one that either by the fact that they only ranked one candidate, no candidates, or they ranked candidates that were eliminated and didn't continue in the rounds of voting, that ballot can no longer be utilized.
Right. And following up,
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I understand that under the premise that ranked choice voting should be the way to go, then a vote that did not, you know, that you might want to call something a wasted vote, but I'm afraid that's a pejorative term. A vote for a candidate that does not win is not a wasted vote. it's a vote that was for a candidate that did not win. So I take a little bit of umbrage at the term wasted vote. But be that as it may, isn't there a possibility that a person running for office, I'm sorry, that a person voting could see a candidate win election under ranked choice voting who was not the first choice of majority of the voters? In other words, the person might win a majority of the second or third tranche of votes and still win election of the office. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, let me touch on a few things with that. I would agree with you. We don't use, as the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center, we don't use the term wasted because we agree with you. Any vote cast, even a blank ballot cast, is a voter expressing their is expressing their preference or their casting a ballot is voting, and that's our goal, is to ensure people are voting. In terms of the process that you were describing, if you think about a situation where you've got a large number of candidates, say five candidates that are running for either in a primary or in a general election in whatever capacity, if the votes are tallied and no candidate has received more than, say, 35% of the vote, then that's not a majority of voters expressing. That's just a portion of the voters. And so by going through the round of counting and taking the last place finisher and the votes that are cast for that last place finisher and looking at those voters' second choice and transferring counting those second choices and the additional to the remaining candidates, now you begin to understand what the consensus is and that the majority of the voters are behind a certain candidate. And that's the entire intent, and that's why I referenced inclusive leadership and broader support. When it's all said and done, the votes now have been tallied, and now we know that one person had a majority of the support of all the voters. I hope I've explained that in a way that conveys what you were asking.
Through the chair.
So we actually have a few more invited testifiers, and there are members of the public that are online to testify.
Right.
Okay. Representative Sadler, is there
a
quick follow-up?
The terminology here is important, preference. I think you just described a situation, as I did, in which a person who, under ranked choice voting, would win election would not be the primary or the top priority, the top preferred candidate. They might win the majority of the second tier, but they would not be the first choice of a majority of voters. I'll just say this. I'm concerned that this ranked choice voting seems to change the mechanism of the ballot into a mechanism of kind of creatively channeling people's votes and changing the dynamics of the decision process. And that concerns me. So I'll leave it at that and let the people testify and resume my questions later.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Benson-Bell, for your testimony this morning. Next, under invited testimony, we have Jeremy Spate from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Mr. Spate, are you with us?
I am. Can everyone hear me? Yep.
Yes, we can. If you could identify yourself for the record and your affiliation and begin your presentation.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to speak. My name is Jeremy Spate. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I received my PhD from Concordia University in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I am Canadian, and maybe as a side note to start, this was ranked choice voting was an election issue in our recent national elections. Our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, this was a big campaign issue for him. He subsequently backtracked from instituting this change, but this was something as a Canadian familiar to me when I was contacted by Patrick to say something about RCB in Alaska. What I'd like to do is say, in the short amount of time I have to speak, I'd like to say maybe three things and just maybe make a comment about a electoral change, electoral system change, and political values. I do want to say a few things, I think, which might be repetitive about what I see as the significant effects of ranked choice voting, and then also say something about context and institutional change, and maybe I'll explain what I mean by that when I get to this point. But this first point about values and institutional change, electoral system change, that I see, like, debates about electoral systems as part of broader debates about what's important in society and in different contexts. So generally speaking, although there are a number of problems with first-past-the-post systems or plurality systems that are currently in place in Alaska, across much of the United States and Canada and other places in Western democracies, they're generally supported for a number of reasons, that although at the constituency level candidates can win with only a plurality of the vote, they do tend to produce majorities in legislatures, right? And this is a big reason why advocates of first-past-the-post systems support them, right? So, for example, when you have a majority in a legislature, this might increase accountability, right, between those elected, between winning parties and citizens, right? Citizens are more, let's say, aware about who's responsible for making certain policy choices compared to, let's say, coalition governments, which are dominant in many contexts in many countries in Western Europe. There's an argument that they're, because they produce majorities, they produce more effective governments, right? Governments that are able to implement policy in a more efficient way than in contexts where there are, again, coalition governments, right? So these are, when people support first-past-the-post systems or plurality systems, these are the sort of values that people advocate for in doing so. In contrast, proportional representation systems, of which ranked choice voting, I see it as sort of a modified form, that when people support proportional representation systems, where, again, very quickly right now, maybe I can expand on this in the Q&A, where outcomes, where party percentages of seats are directly proportional to the percentage of votes cast in an election, this, right, advocates of PR systems generally are supporting values like, and again, this has come up in earlier testimonies, but representation, right, that broader segments of society, minority groups, are represented in legislatures, right? So this is an important value for those advocating for these sorts of changes. Conversely, there might be problems with accountability and effectiveness, right? Where you have coalitions and government, the ability to make choices, it becomes impeded by the fact that smaller parties and parliaments can function as veto players, right, can block policy change. So whenever I talk about, teach, or write about electoral change, or broader institutional change, that these debates are really couched in debates about what values are important in society, right? And typically I juxtapose, you know, this accountability and effectiveness versus representation. And these are the, you know, the sort of key values that are being supported by these different positions regarding institutional change. Now, that sort of big picture comment aside, I've identified, I think this really overlaps with what others have said already about ranked choice voting, but for me, I've listed four that I think are significant. So it definitely ensures majorities at the constituency level, right, in contrast to plurality, first-past-the-post systems, where we can candidates can win with less than 50% of the vote. It empowers third parties or third party supporters. Right, these candidates or parties are more likely to receive votes in ranked choice voting systems compared to first past the post or plurality systems. I'm going to use the same language and maybe I'll support it a bit in the Q&A. But again, this argument, this is political science jargon a little bit, but reduces this wasted vote or strategic voting issue, so that citizens are more likely to vote their conscience rather than supporting a party they might not otherwise want to vote for, but a party that they think, that citizens think will win. And then finally, this is brought up a couple times as well, but it incentivizes moderate political discourse, right, where parties have to worry about supporters of other parties who might vote for them in subsequent rounds of ranked choice voting, that they're more likely to reach out to these sorts of candidates, right, rather than demonize political opponents. And then the final point, this is maybe something to think about for those on the committee, but there's certainly not a lot of academic research on the outcomes of ranked choice voting. And I think with a lot of types of institutional change, the effects can be mixed depending on the context. So I would, as someone, I don't focus on American politics or Alaskan politics myself. My focus is on politics in the developing world, but I would encourage everyone in the committee to think about the contextual factors in Alaska that might have an impact on this type of change. So I've listed a couple here, but maybe other institutions, right? So here I'm thinking about parliamentary versus presidential systems, right, which is to say the relationship between the legislature and the executive that might have an impact. Maybe just cleavages in society, like divisions in society that might have an impact on how people vote. Let's say lobbying or special interest rules would have an impact as well. So I'm just throwing some things out there, but certainly there's no one-to-one in terms of the predicted outcomes and these types of institutional changes, but there are other contextual factors that mediate the kinds of impacts these changes might have. So I think those are the three points I wanted to get across, and I think I'll leave it there.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think somewhere I had heard through your presentation that you said that there isn't a whole lot of academic research on the topic yet. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah. There is some, there's not a lot, and a lot of it is mixed.
So
in terms of,
to follow up, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying here is you kind of gave us a question also to actually look into. The possibility of why elections aren't attended as much. I believe you also gave us that challenge too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I would say this. I didn't really specify this, but another argument supporting ranked choice voting is encouraging voter turnout, definitely.
So through the chair, ma'am. I do have a place where I'm going with this. In 2014, okay, I'm just going to take an example. And the reason I went to 14 was because there wasn't a presidential election then. It was whacked then. There was 509,000 voters in the state of Alaska. 285 were the only ones that voted, which is only 50%. And that was in the general election. In 2014, in the primary election, 494 registered voters were in the primary, and only 193 voted. That was 39%. So the presidential election probably brought out more people to vote of those that were voted, that were registered voters. And so that was obviously a calling card for people to turn out and vote. But I'm saying here and now is if you have 39% of the population willing to vote, you don't really have a majority anyway, okay? So, and most of the people that I talk to say, we're 4 hours behind, we already know, well, the rest of the state voted, my vote's not going to matter. I mean, rest of the country voted, my vote really is not going to matter a whole lot if you look at the presidential vote. In the regular elections, you go, my vote really won't matter. And I'm thinking if you have the first, second, third, I'm not sure that it's actually going to help bring more people to the poll unless I'm wrong here. And I don't know, is it is there any kind of study out there that's actually brought more people to the poll in some way?
I'm not going to say in terms of empirical evidence that is not, I can't comment on that right now, but I mean, the argument would be, right, if you take the presidential election as an example, that where individuals maybe who are upset with either the Republican or Democratic candidate, and if that functions as a disincentive to vote, right, in a system where there's ranked choice voting, that they're maybe more inclined to vote for a third party candidate, that's the argument about the motivation why they might go and vote, right? So being, you know, upset or unhappy with the two candidates you're confronted with, if there's a possibility that voting for a third party would actually have an impact on the election, well, this is a powerful motivation for would-be voters, right? Voters in another context who might not go to the polls.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Spate. We have one more question, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Spate. And as an academic, I'm going to ask you somewhat of a reductio ad absurdum question, but ranked choice voting seems to be a step into broadening the amount of choice from the, you know, basically party A, party B, maybe party C. Would it be possible to just simply open the ballot to every person to just do a universal write-in? That way everybody could rank the individual they thought was the most important person, and there would be no limitation to the access to the ballot. I know, practically speaking, that's kind of difficult to do, but theoretically, would not that address the problem of the candidate ABC and have all the benefits of ranked choice voting?
No, I if I understand what you're saying correctly, I don't think so, because, right, it's a question about counting the votes, right? So people can write in their support for any candidate, but again, if it's a winner-take-all system, right, in a plurality system, that still disincentivizes even doing that, right? So I think what you're saying in a write-in context, that anyone can support any candidate they want, but it's still, there's a powerful disincentive to do that, because if I want to vote for what I perceive to be someone who I believe in but is maybe a fringe candidate, why would I write them in when I think they have no chance in winning a congressional district or, So if I understand what you're saying, that's my response.
What it seems like this system of voting does is give a previously unavailable advantage to fringe candidates. Is that not correct?
Now, you should definitely debate whether this is a positive or negative thing, right? I'm saying, like, what terms, I guess fringe sounds, but let's say minority candidates or candidates that are less supported, you know, maybe in some cases people might applaud this, right, as being representative, including more groups. But at the same time, you know, there is a literature, for example, extremist parties, PR systems are more likely to create spaces for the rise of extreme parties on the right or the left in Western Europe, right, because of the nature of the electoral system, right? So this is, you know, it gives voice to voices that maybe parties or candidates that are expressing problematic views, but it's including these minority voices. But whether or not you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, I think is up for political debate. Right?
Fair enough. And I will just comment lastly.
If we could hold our comments to the end, we do still have quite a list of testimony for this morning. Can your comments wait, Representative Sadler?
Sure.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Spate, for your testimony. Next, for invited testimony, we have Charles Biles. Mr. Biles, are you with us?
Hello.
Great. If you could please identify yourself for the record and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Charles Biles. I'm an emeritus professor of mathematics from Humboldt State University in Arcata, California, and I currently live in Rohnert Park, California. I would like to give a special thank you to the House Committee on Community and Regional Affairs for the State of Alaska for this invitation to give input regarding HB 390. Now, my expertise is that of an academic whose primary research concerns the history of congressional apportionment on the national level, that is, how many seats in the U.S. House of Representatives each state gets. But associated topics with this include districting and voting, and all of these are essential components in a larger picture that's framed by the question, what is representation in our American democracy? History from the time of the framers of our Constitution has evolved answers on the premise that the source of governmental power must come from the people. Now, fundamental to American democracy is the right to vote. The ballot is the people's main voice box for representation. The structure of the ballot determines how much input an individual voter has in an election. Now, the current system of structuring the ballot is to list the options or candidates with the instruction, vote for one. If there are only two options, then there's no problem. The winner is simply determined by majority vote. However, a problem exists when there are three or more options. In this event, the vote for one instruction is the most limiting among ballot possibilities, allowing the smallest voice for a voter. The voter gets to say something about one candidate, and then the input is all over. As a result, a substantial number votes strategically rather than honestly out of concern for throwing away their vote. Vote for one does not allow many voters to support their candidate of first choice without the fear that they will elect their least liked candidate. Now, the worst-case scenario of vote for one is that the least desirable candidate may win the election because the winner is simply a plurality winner. If there are three candidates, then, for example, two well-liked candidates may split the popular vote, 33% to 31%, leaving a widely disliked or fringe candidate, the winner, with 36% of the vote. The confusion and agony of strategy versus honesty when there are three or more ballot options can be overcome by replacing vote for one by ranked choice voting. The ballot would still list the same options, but the instruction to the voter is to rank the options rather than merely choose one. Thus, opportunity for voter input is extended to each ballot option, not restricted to just one option. Of course, if a voter simply wants to just vote for one, then they only need to mark their first choice. Hence, the vote for one structure still remains for voters who want that structure. With ranked choice voting, voters who want to make additional input may continue by ranking their second, third, etc. choices. This supports the voter who wants to be a greater participant in our democratic republic. There are clear advantages to ranked choice voting, and I will offer five. First, voters get to provide more input and thus have more say-so in the election. Voter apathy induced by the belief that their vote doesn't really count or doesn't matter is diminished. When no candidate wins a majority of the vote in the first round of counting, then those additional ranks make a difference. The final winner is a majority, not just a plurality winner. Second, voters get the opportunity to vote for candidates they support, not just vote for someone as a way.
Mr. Miles, are you with us?
Vote for your favorite phone system.
Oh, dear. Well, we do have...
So we do have Mr. Biles' written testimony that we can consider. I think maybe we lost him. Did we lose him?
Yep.
Mr. Biles, if you can hear us, can you check if you're on mute?
Okay.
So...
big politics going on.
We will take Mr. Biles' written testimony for the record. I would like to acknowledge that we have both Josie Benke here in the room and Carol Thompson, I believe, on the phone from the Division of Elections, who are available to answer questions, as well as Alpheus Bullard from Ledge Legal, who's also available for questions. We do have a list of individuals who've signed up for public testimony, but I do want to ask the committee if there are any questions at this time. Okay.
Questions for?
For invited testifiers.
No, at this point, no.
Okay. So thank you for those who've spoken on record. I will now open public testimony for House Bill 390. If you are calling in, please take your phone off speaker and use your handset so the committee can hear you clearly. We will begin with David Neese. David, or excuse me, Mr. Neese, are you on the phone? Oh, sorry. Brief at ease.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
If you could just hang tight one second.
David Neese? Yep.
Thank you, everyone, for your flexibility in my first chairing of the meeting. So, okay. At this time, I'd like to open public testimony for House Bill 390. Apologies, Mr. Neese. Thank you for your flexibility. Are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you, and you're doing a fine job, Madam Chair. It's always tough the first time out. Yeah, I'd like to give my testimony. I'm Dave Neese. I'm education researcher at Alaska Policy Forum, but I also spend a lot of time looking at the history of elections in Alaska. And the invited testimony has a couple of things that you need to take a good, solid look at. I've sent Representative Sadler a copy of my testimony. 6 points. Number one, Minnesota, one of the states that has proportional voting in ranked choice voting in its cities, is looking statewide to ban it. They're not happy with the results. Number two, in the Cambridge city elections, it does indeed have an effect. The effect is that populations of about 10% have more chance of getting candidates put on the city council. There's a very excellent article about that. When you look at the history of primaries in Alaska, the very first time the people, and the only time the people in the state of Alaska got a choice at it was 1947, and they just wanted a open ballot. That's been struck down a couple times by courts, so it's whatever you do, it's probably going to go that way. A better option probably is to make it available to municipalities to adopt, like plastic bags. Politico is called the Maine initiative, a democratic experiment. Part of this is to change the way the presidential elections are done so that you don't use the, at the end, you know, it's just a popular vote thing. It also has an interesting effect because it's difficult to do. You actually have less voters voting. And in San Francisco, when they took a look at their San Francisco elections, they actually have less minority and less majority voters voting because it's difficult to figure out. It's not just circle a bubble. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4. And the last thing to put out there is that, you know, we just got done with the Olympics. The Olympics does not use ranked choice voting to score the ice skating. They use a different version of this. And so it's an interesting prospect, but it does have consequences. It does, however, do one thing. It turns out happier voters. Because they get to vote on everybody, and occasionally the candidates that get elected are indeed the fringe candidates that would not get elected through the process that we have right now. So I've included 6 different studies for you to look at. Most of them do not say this is a good system of choosing elected officials. And that's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Neese.
No question.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Neese. I appreciate I'll verify that I did get your email. I'll pass it on to the committee for them to make sure they have. My question voter participation, does ranked choice voting make it easier or harder for people to endorse a candidate publicly, to give money to a campaign, to have word of mouth, tell their friends and neighbors about things? Does ranked choice voting limit that, or for that matter, does the current system limit that participation in the voting system? Are you with us, Mr. Neese?
Mr. Neese, did you hear the question?
Hey, Dave.
We're having some problems this morning.
Let it hit off.
Okay.
Oh, well.
It's the Russian.
Mr. Neese, can you hear us?
Is he on? Oh, okay. Okay. So we do have another individual for public testimony, Marilyn Russell from Fairbanks. Ms. Russell, are you on the phone?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation on the record and begin your testimony.
All right. Yes. Good morning, everyone. My affiliations, let's see. Is that asking what party I'm registered with?
No, if you were speaking on record for yourself or any organization.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes. I'm speaking for myself, and I'm a retired elementary school teacher, and have just been very, very interested in this topic. And should I start now?
Yes, please, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I am so delighted that this issue is on the table. I think it's a way to assure that a person elected is the most popular. Because in effect, if a person is elected, if the person elected is not your first choice, she or he could be your second choice. And chances are that you won't hate the winner. So I just think it has a lot of possibilities. And you know, to go on, all candidates have a vested interest in all voters, because if they're not going to be the voter's first choice, then at least they'd be the second choice. And another thing is that voters don't have to vote against their conscience. If they want to vote against a certain candidate, then their vote will be lost because it'll go to their second or third choice, which is fine. I think that we as a society get to see the actual choices of the public, and not just about who was the winner, but all the others that they're interested in and what they stand for. And, of course, I also go on to think, oh, all right, well, maybe this will only be about the primary, but maybe it'll morph into other parts of the election system. And then, as I say, we would know not only the winning idea, but others too. So, all right, go on. Let's see. People may be disgruntled initially in the first year or so because, oh, my goodness, there's so many candidates, and who are you going to work for, I mean, look at and do all that research. But I think that I've done some research on this myself and found that then eventually after a few more years, people do sit up and pay more attention. And they do have a greater number of the percentage of the population who actually does do the voting. So, you know, it becomes better and better as more and more people are informed and involved. Let's see, another point is that people are not forced to vote or rank for all the candidates. They could just go to the polls and just for one. And, of course, that repeats what people have already talked about. And something that I especially like is in the election system season, the candidates tend to have a different approach because they kind of want to get along with each other. They want to get along with people in order to be more popular and less likely to alienate more people and have and therefore not have a negative campaign. So, yeah, I'm all in favor of ranked choice voting. I also call it instant runoff voting. And there may be a difference there that I don't understand, but I'm so glad yeah, that this has come forth. All right, that's, I guess, all I'm going to say right now. Thank you.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I admit I don't have a good question, Ms. Russell. I just wanted to thank you for calling in to share your testimony. And I guess I've got one, which would be, in the balance of power, where do you see this, or where do you see this shifting the balance of power between the various groups or organizations or individuals who seek to influence elections?
Could you explain that a little more, balance of power?
Certainly. It's my impression, and this might be a leading question. It's my impression that at present, politics in the United States are heavily weighted towards parties and towards other groups of wealth and influence. Would you agree with that, and do you think that this bill does anything to redress that?
Yes, it does, and it certainly will put in different levels of economics and, you know, people of all different ethnicities and cultures and who has how much money and all, and it would definitely address leveling the playing field. I like that idea, too. So, and I'm very alarmed about gerrymandering. So, I mean, you know, this is a wonderful idea. Thank you very much for bringing it to the table.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you to the committee for your questions this morning. There are a couple of us that have another commitment coming up at 9:30. So I will be holding over, or we will be holding over House Bill 390 until next week, where we will continue public testimony and any member questions that we might have for the Division of Elections or Ledge Legal. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 3rd at 8 a.m. And the meeting for Community and Regional Affairs is adjourned at 9:26 a.m.